When you have a banker who's local, some people with these local regional banks, your asset is a part of their portfolio. And if you have an asset and they're looking at you as an operator, someone who signed on the loan and however you structured it, do what you say you're going
to
do.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome everybody to Multifamily Deal Lab, where we dissect deals. And I am with Victor Bell, who used to be from Hawaii, and we have a long history together. Victor,
yes,
first came to RE Mentor System way back, I don't know, 2004, 2005. Was it that far ago, Victor?
Yeah, I think it was in 2002 or three.
It was early, and he lived in Hawaii at the time.
Yeah.
And he's just started doing deals. Went to the boot camp, got involved in mentorship, started doing deals, and sent me a testimonial. Yeah. Sent me a testimonial with a picture of him and his wife. And my favorite quote from that testimonial was, "My wife works in the corporate world. I don't know why. I spend my days playing with my son," who was 2 or 3 years old at the time, "playing my son and picking my nose. And I'm having a great time."
Doing nothing.
Doing nothing. You were investing in emerging markets around the US.
Yeah, exactly. Man, and thanks again for having me. I really, really appreciate it. I really do.
We're going to ask you to talk about a deal. You moved to San Diego. You're living now. And we're going to talk about a deal that you recently resold that you bought in 2021. And that was in Las Vegas. So why don't you tell everybody about the deal that we're going to talk about?
Okay. So if we can, could we talk about that Hawaii deal?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So the Hawaii deal was actually really good because I feel like that's a deal that people can resonate with for sure. So I end up finding that deal with a broker buddy of mine. He owned the property. So technically it was an off-market deal. He was a broker, but he was dealing with me as a seller because he had just got that property. He was like, "Hey, I got a deal. Here's what I want for it. Can you do it?" And I had actually just came out of a different scenario with that financially with another property. I had picked up an apartment building in Cincinnati. If you remember, you were like, "Vic, don't do that deal." I did it anyways, and it sank my boat. So for you guys out there wondering, you guys need to listen to Dave.
Yeah, probably the reason, I can't remember that specific deal, but I remember back then there was no good management in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. We had a bad property manager and they drained our escrow accounts and we ended up having to file for bankruptcy at that time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that deal was a saving grace for me because it taught me a lot. It taught me what I needed to be doing more of, which was I needed to be around and needed to understand exactly what you guys teach people, like their systems. And you need to manage the manager, manage the systems that are in place. And you need to be very aware of what's happening. So that deal actually pushed me into my own backyard because I was in Hawaii and that deal was in Cincinnati. I did deals in Vegas, Texas, Arizona, all these different states, but I kept thinking my own backyard was too expensive. Right. So then finally, it was like, "Hey, I got this deal. Here's what I want for it. Can you come up?"
Let me stop you right there for a second.
Sure. So
when you were younger, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, was your family middle class, lower middle class, upper middle class?
Middle class, but my dad was in the military.
Yep.
Yeah, my dad was in the military, but then my parents split up. So my mom went back to Louisiana and then my dad stayed in the Army. And then I went to my mom and we kind of floated a little bit. We lived in a shelter. Then my mom started working and then we got our own home. But we weren't poor. My parents both worked. So it wasn't that, to your point, it was a middle class or lower middle class mindset about what was possible.
That's what I was getting to, because I know myself, when I first started investing in buying properties, I thought the good properties are too expensive. And I had to stay in the CC minus properties, and it actually took a partner, a silver spoon partner, somebody who wouldn't get out of the car at one of my properties. He's like, "What? You own this?" I'm like, "In that car."
Right.
I just want to get across to everybody. It's a limiting belief. And especially if you come from a middle class or a low middle class family where you struggled, or you're always told you got to skimp, you got to save, and money's scarce, money's hard to get, and work hard and all that. That's typically how people start out with that mindset of, "Well, that's too expensive."
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to look at the numbers. This is what my silver spoon partner told me. He brought me a B deal and I'm like, "Oh no, man, that's too expensive." And they bought me another one. I was like, "Oh no, man, you can't do that deal." And they bought me a third one. He's like, "Dave, I don't understand. You said as long as it meets the Trinity, then it's a good deal, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, this meets the Trinity." I said, "Yeah, but those units are expensive." And he says, "Yeah, but it meets the Trinity. It cash flows properly." And I'm like, "Damn, that was like a turning point." It's like, "Damn, he's right."
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. That was one of the deals I got. I ended up buying two deals from him and then I bought a third one right down the street from this one. And I had the same aha. I was like, "Oh, wow." He had to show me how to underwrite it a little differently. because we were in a higher price market and some of the numbers were different from what I was used to. To your point, the same way you run a C property or a D property and you're trying to manage that is very different when you're running a B property or in a better location. It's a different thing. And I had to get my mind wrapped around that. My underwriting needed to change a little bit.
Yep.
Being way too conservative. But that was just for fear, right? Fear of not understanding, hey, buy low, sell high, get a property in the worst neighborhood you can and fix it up and hope and pray. So, and it does work, but at some point that wasn't going to work on this. So in this deal, I end up getting this deal. We closed this deal. I found a partner. So you guys know.
Which one are you talking about? You talking about the deal that you sent me or are you talking about?
The deal in Hawaii, this deal right here, this 10 unit.
Okay. So that one's in Hawaii, in Honolulu?
That one's in Hawaii. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got it for $1 million and it appraised for 1.4 million. Go figure. Great. I had no idea. As is. So we stepped into $400,000 worth of equity right away. And I had one plan because once I understood, hey, go in and raise the rents, stabilize the property for 24 months, whatever the bank is telling you need to do, and then refinance and take out your investors' money, give it back to them, and just keep them in the deal and then leapfrog into the next deal. That was the strategy. We did that. And then later, again, when I sold that property, we sold it for $1.7 million, even though we had no more money in the deal. And it cash flowed about $36,000 a year for 7.5 years.
How many units was that?
That was only 10.
Oh.
The cap rates in that market have been pretty much around 4 and 5. So I had to kind of make a little bit of an adjustment on the purposes of that investment. So just like right now, I think all markets are somewhere around 4 or 5. But that was a huge switch for me. And then I bought another property and replicated those strategies. That was the most money I'd ever made. I was like, holy hell, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was really picking my nose then. But
you and my kids. Yeah, now you have multiple kids, right?
Yes, we have 6 kids total, for sure.
I didn't know you had 6.
Yeah, so the 3 oldest, and we have Marquise, who was in that picture, and then we have twin boys at the end. They're 15 now.
Oh, nice. You know my pain with twins.
I do, man. Twins, man. They make life easy.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this deal in Vegas. The interesting thing about the property package that you sent me about this deal, just so everybody knows, it's a 20-unit deal. It's in Las Vegas.
That was one of these. That was in Hawaii, not Vegas.
Oh, this is Hawaii?
Yeah, yeah, that's Hawaii.
So do you own those other 4 properties in this neighborhood?
No, we sold them off.
But you did?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, because when he sent me this property package, he sent me a heat map, and it shows that he owns 4 properties, and that one was the 5th property in that area.
I don't think that was mine.
Oh, this isn't your deal?
No.
Okay. Somebody sent me this deal in Vegas. I thought it was for the show. So then what are we talking about then?
I'm confused. So I bought this property, and this will be good for people listening too, to kind of show.
Okay. Where.
So I found this property through a broker. I bought 2 properties from this guy.
Okay.
So then I started farming the neighborhood around it, which is what you teach how to do. So I was like, hey, you know what? I like land assembly. I like trying to buy all the properties around it so I can control the rents. So I found another property, and it was interesting how I found it. I got a list from the title company of all properties owned in a trust that the trustee had changed, but the trust name didn't.
Okay.
So it was still owned by the same person, the same trust. It was like the Goo family or whatever. And then the person that was on their trustee name was their last name, still to the trust. And then it had a different person. They had held the property for a long time in the family. So I went by the property and I just happened to, one of the tenants were out there, not this one, it was the one down the street. And I was like, hey, who's the manager? Who's the owner? And would they be interested in potentially selling? I'm just kind of in the neighborhood. And they're like, yeah, she's over one of the units. So the owner, her and her husband happened to be inside of one of the units working because there was a person moved. And I was like, hey, you know what? I got a property down the street. I love this property. I love the location. The other one was a 12 unit. The one behind me is a 10. And I was like, if you guys would be interested in selling, I would love to talk to you about it. And they were like, yeah, we'll see. So we talked and I offered them $1.2 million just verbally, because in Hawaii, you have to do things quick. You can't be like, I need your financials. I need your rent roll. Like, there's a different way to do it, right? I ended up going swimming because we lived on the beach. I ended up like going in the backyard, going swimming and stuff like that. And she called. And she's like, Victor, I'm sorry, I can't take your offer. I really want to. I talked to my brothers and sisters. She was the trustee for the family. And I was like, okay, cool. So what would it take? She's like, well, you offered 1.2. She's like, I can't do that. She's like, would you do 1.25, like 50 grand more? And I was like, wow, I could. What were your thoughts? And she was like, and I can't sell it fast. I'm going to probably need about 90 days. And she was like, and I'm sorry if that kind of ruins things. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm positive I didn't make that work. Because again, I didn't have the money lined up for this deal.
Right.
So I was like, okay, let's figure that out. So we said yes to that and we closed that deal. So again, that deal closed. I knew it was going to be more closer to about 1.4 million. I wasn't offering less. I was just really just kind of spitballing because I bought one down the street for that. That was a 12 unit. So I just came in at 100,000 a door, which everything around it, like further into Honolulu and stuff was 200,000 a door. Now it's three. Yeah. So we closed that deal as well. And so people know, my partner was actually through RE Mentor.
Who's your partner?
Kevin Young.
Okay.
Yeah. Kevin passed away after we closed, after we sold off.
You met him at a boot camp?
No, actually, you know what? So that was when I was kind of doing some coaching. I talked to one of the coaches. I can't remember who she was, just random. And I was like, hey, I'm looking for a partner on a deal I have in Hawaii. And she was like, oh, you know what? I think I know somebody I talked to the other day that was interested in partnering. And then we talked on the phone. I told him what I had. And he was like, dude, I'm interested. Yeah. We had the properties for about 7.5, 8 years. He had only come to Hawaii 3 times in that time frame. I ran everything.
Wow. If I had a property in Hawaii, I'd be there every year.
Yeah. You know what? He came, but he would do other things. He was did Iron Man stuff. So he'd go bike, swim and all the other stuff. So yeah, but this was a great deal. One for my partner. And I'm sharing that with everybody here. Like, look, the network that Dave has together and Jeannie and Jeff and everybody involved, this is a network of people who do want to partner with you and they do understand what you're doing, right?
Here's the journey that you took. Basically, you came in as a client, mm-hmm. went through the boot camp, went through mentorship, started doing deals, started doing a lot of deals. And then people in this world have a heart of giving back because your life changes. Things are going for the better and you're so appreciative. They come back. How can I give back myself? How can I be a coach? Can I teach other people how to do this?
Yeah.
Using your system as well. Some coaches have been with us, Don Goff and Craig Picard, they've been with us since we started the program in 2006. We've been teaching mm-hmm. since 2002. And then some people join us for 4 or 5 years, get busy with other things, and then go up. I remember you had a big, what was it, executive self-improvement program.
Yeah, for sure. And that was another way. It was like, I was doing real estate. I always tell people that. People like, oh, you had a gym, you trained MMA fighters, you were an MMA fighter. Then you had these other programs. And I always remind them, I'm like, real estate afforded me the opportunity to do that. So it allowed me to give back more. Right. It gave me time. To your point, you know what? I bought my first apartment building that I lived in because I moved away from Texas and moved to Hawaii in 2002. And I hadn't even went to your boot camp yet. I only had the manual.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I called the old landlord and I was like, hey, would you sell? And he said, yeah. And I didn't even know what I was doing.
Home study system. Yeah. Yeah. Usually people that get either the book, Multifamily Millions, or the home study system. The Multifamily Millions are people that buy that book and then go out and try to do it. Because that book wasn't meant to teach people how to invest. It was to show people what you could do with investing. Mm-hmm. And so they went to the boot camp and they're like, oh, wow, this is where I made those mistakes. Because it's all the systems in there. Then people come to the boot camp and that's enough information to go out and start doing it. It's good. And then people come into mentorship and then they just explode.
Yeah. Mentorship is game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so everything that I've done, I've learned from you guys. I had bought multifamily properties before meeting you guys, but I didn't know what I was doing. And be honest with you, that I can remember, you're the only one who had an actual training to show somebody from start to finish how to do it.
I was the only one back then.
Yeah.
Everybody else that's in there right now came through my system.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing because it just means more people are learning. There's more exposure to multifamily investing and people changing their lives.
Yeah. Hey,
those two deals, what were like the biggest surprises that you had? Were there any mistakes that you made? Like what learning lessons did you have?
Number one, so I raised the equity from a partner. We were starting to syndicate and then I ended up getting one partner. So I didn't need to do that. We stuck with the JV. When I got bank financing, local bank financing. One of the biggest lessons I learned was when you tell the bank you're going to do something, when you're going in for that loan, you need to do it. So they are your partners. Like on that deal behind me, and I apologize, guys, it's fuzzy back there, but I busted out a bunch of concrete and I planted a row of palm trees. I'm like a geek for palm trees. I like this resort style living look. And we closed on the property and maybe like a month and a half later, I hadn't did it yet. I hadn't executed that plan. I told them that I would. And I was at some seminar someplace and one of my buddies called me. No, the broker that I got the deal from, who's a buddy of mine's, called me. And he was like, hey, when are you going to do the concrete and the palm trees? Because I got an artist rendering done of what I was going to do there. And I presented it with my closing package to the bank. So they saw a finished product of what I had drawn up. And he was like, hey, because Guy, his name was Guy Shindu. Guy called and he drives by that area quite a bit. And he saw that you hadn't done it yet. He's like, you might want to do it. And I was like, okay, that was a huge lesson for me. Huge lesson is that when you have a banker who's local, some people with these local regional banks, your asset is a part of their portfolio and they manage their portfolio. Somebody's responsible for it. And sometimes they drive by properties. And if you have an asset and they're looking at you as an operator, someone who signed on the loan and however you structured it, do what you say you're going to do. And they are looking. So that was a huge lesson for me. I mean, there was a couple more, but I think that really stands out. And you teach people that this is a very ethical business. You're responsible for keeping a roof over people's heads and a lot of money. So I think the main thing for me was executing on that. Then the other thing that we said too, one of the other bigger things was just moving away from the buy low, sell high and just stick to buy high, sell higher. That was a concept that rang out in my mind. I was like, I would have never got these deals had I been looking for a deal that I was trying to get at a discount, because I wasn't.
What's your favorite value add?
Parking lots and palm trees. I had parking lots, palm trees, and lighting. That's it. So as soon as I get there, I resurface the parking lot, strip the parking lot with the white strips, make it look clean. And I add palm trees, preferably taller than the building, because it makes the building look taller. And I add lighting.
How much do those cost? The palm tree taller than the building.
Sometimes $5,000. So it depends on where you go and whoever's going to put them in.
Yeah. I guess you wouldn't like, I'm thinking about, I planted a couple of apple seeds in my backyard. So you get them like they're a certain height.
Yeah.
Don't they grow really slow too?
They do grow really slow. So you can buy them more mature. So that's where the cost is on this one. We kind of bought some teenage trees and they kind of grew. Some of them died. We had to redo them. Some kids tore all the leaves off of them. We had to go back and tear those out and do stuff. So to me, that's the first thing people see when they walk in and it makes them feel good. So then I start going to the units, but that's first. That's always first. We paint the building, parking lot, palm trees, and more lighting, and it just brightens the place up.
What's your typical exit strategy? Are you looking for appreciation? Are you looking to force the appreciation? Condo conversions, have you tried any of those?
No, we did not do any condo conversions, but I tried to buy a lot of properties from people who had bought properties to condo convert, so they overpaid. And then their condo conversion market crashed around them, and now they're stuck with that debt. So it's easy to get seller financing because they're like, hey, we just want to get out, because they usually don't pencil.
Let's stick there for a second, because we're in a market where there are condo conversions that have busted because we're at the bottom transitioning point now.
Right.
So explain that strategy again. So you went after busted condo conversions. How did you find them? Were there any caveats? Were there anything like, I know in a busted condo conversion, if there are multiple owners, if they've already started selling some, but they couldn't sell them all, that's a bad deal because you don't have full cooperation with the owners. You got to buy them all or buy them none. How would you find them? Explain that whole strategy.
Well, for me, if I'm looking at it, well, so I don't usually go after the ones who started to sell and then they stopped, because I typically understand their profit is in their last phase of sales.
Right.
I've kind of done that. So I like to go after people, and you teach this, buyer's market phase one and two, seller's market phase one and two. So if you're taking a look at where you are in the cycle of a seller's market phase one and two, you got a lot of developers that came in and built new product. You have a lot of value add guys that started buying apartment buildings as the market got tight and they started overpaying. And you're looking at them and they can't pencil. So let's say you can get a list of properties that sold within the last 2 years. And for us, it was like 1-for-1 parking or 2-for-1 parking, because in order to condo convert a unit in the markets that we were looking at, they won't let you do it unless there's an adequate parking to go with that unit, right? So I would just look like, hey, who overpaid for a property at the height of the market? And if they went in and that was their, like I said earlier, they were like, hey, we can buy it as an apartment building. We're going to put X amount of money down. But with the lender as a highest and best, we're saying, hey, it's going to be worth X if we do condo conversion. So I just find out who they are and reach out to those people and be like, hey, did you guys buy this as an apartment or were you guys going to condo convert it? And then they'll tell me, or I'll ask the lender, call the lender, be like, hey, you guys did a loan on this. Were they going to condo convert this out? Is that what their highest and best was? And then I'll just ask. And usually condo converters are always condo converters. Mm-hmm. So you rarely ever find some guy who's an apartment guy who goes, hey, the strategy's changed. I'm going to condo convert. It's usually somebody who's built their business off of that. And that's a boom and bust business.
Absolutely. For condo converters, they're looking for the affordability index to go below 1 to 0.72 before they get involved. And that's up like 3/4 of the way up on the emerging market. It's about 1/4 of the way down from the seller's market phase two. So there's not a big time.
Like that window just shuts. Clap.
Then it busts.
They're stuck holding those assets until the next cycle. We talked to a guy who had bought a property for, I don't know, I think he was at the time, it was maybe like $500,000 a door in Hawaii, which was ridiculous for like 60s product. And he was like, yeah, we're going to condo convert it with the soft cost. And they were going to put in about $50,000 a door and hopes to sell for like $700,000 a door. And the market changed on them. They had to hold that product for a while. They end up going belly up and filing bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's what happens to that. And also developers as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do this. We're nearing the end. I want to get an idea of what are you reading now and what is your favorite business book of all time?
Ooh, favorite business book of all. So right now what I've done is I've kind of switched over to audiobooks because I'm always either out at deals or doing stuff. So it's like how to invest or how to be an investor. It's a really good book, but it goes through like Larry Fink. Because I have a real estate fund now, I started studying bigger firms. So Steve Schwarzman, Larry Fink,
Sam Zell.
Yes. That's really good. Favorite business book of all time?
Yeah.
That's a great question, man. That's a tough one because I separated my brain that real estate and business are not the same thing. And I always get jealous of business guys. I'm like, man, your business is so cool. But I would say probably one of my favorite business books that really changed how I saw business as of late, What It Takes, probably by Steve Schwarzman. And how they started Blackstone. That really has been a catalyst to me. Like it was the understanding of how one of the giants became to be. And that's exciting for me.
I've always had this thing about outliers, like Blackstone. That's an outlier because, I mean, Blackstone is its own
giant.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, of course, trillions of dollars and it's its own ecosystem. They just applied for the ETF and of course they're going to get it. Just a matter of time. And now that they've done it, Gary Gensler, there's no way that he can deny it now. I've read books by David Goggins, and there's a guy that I was learning speaking from a long time ago, Joel Bauer. And
Yeah.
These people are like one-offs. You know what I mean? They're so good at what they do, or they're so different at what they do.
Yeah.
Even like Larry Ellison, just these people. They're so good and different at what they do. Elon Musk is a good example.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their brains are so different. Their bodies are so different. It's like you can aspire to be them, but it's not something you'll ever get to because there's so much natural talent, ability, gene going on there. Yeah. So I'd like to focus on the people that built like medium-sized businesses to large businesses, but not these huge.
Yeah. What stood out to me was that one of the properties that we lived in, it was a beachfront community. I was like, man, I would love to own this. And there was a lot of properties in Hawaii that I would be like, I would love to own this. No one gets into real estate to buy little crappy properties. Everyone's like, dude, I want to be successful, especially for me. I'm a dreamer. I'm a vision person. And I've never not achieved my goals ever. And when I found out Blackstone bought that property in a market cycle similar to one we're in, I was like, oh, wow. Now I just want to understand the firm. I want to understand the company. What did they do? And I was like, okay, they raised money. I mean, naturally, like it was market timing. So I was like, all right, well, I just need to do what they do. And since I'm not going to quit, I pulled away from kind of what you're saying, like what was the talent? It was a lot of connections. It was a lot of being in the right place, right time, a lot of luck, a lot of good connections. But I was like, as a smaller guy, as a regular guy, and even some of the people listening, it's okay to aspire to be a juggernaut. So that's, I was like, all right, they bought these properties I live in. They bought what, 6,000 units or whatever. They're one of the largest holders here in San Diego. I went to every one of the properties they bought in that portfolio. And I was like, I personally wouldn't have bought these properties, but they had the capital. So it inspired me, if that makes sense, to be like, okay, what are they doing that I can model in my own lifetime and just start there? I mean, no one starts too big, right? They start small and they build up to it. But I really want that. And so I thought it was inspiring for me.
Are you still wearing the billionaire shirt?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have it. I just didn't wear it today. I shared that with someone.
Back in 2002, you were wearing a billionaire shirt.
Yes. And that's the one goal that I will not let go of. I'll be there. As a matter of fact, my goal is within the next 5 years. And that's a realistic because I didn't know what I know today.
Awesome. So this has been another edition of Deal Lab, where we dissect deals with Victor Bell. Oh, Victor, in case somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's your contact info?
Sure. You guys can find me on Facebook under Victor Bell or Victor Bell Jr. You can go to Instagram at The Real Victor Bell. Literally, you can Google Victor Bell and in real estate, I'll pop up. I have a personal vendetta to make sure that my name is associated with real estate. There's two Victor Bells. One's like a porn star and one's like a preacher. And I'm somewhere in the middle of that. So because everyone who Googles, they're like, oh, are you this guy? And I'm like, no, I'm the real estate guy. So that's why I try to put out so much stuff.
All right, stay tuned for our next edition.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.